Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Today we get to hear from Lisa. She's going to be starting the actual series focused on love, grace, beauty, and truth. The topic today is love. So would you welcome Lisa?
Hi, everybody. It's really good to be here. Like Peter said, my name is Lisa. And before I get into my talk, I just wanted to take a minute to be up here with you guys and to take in your presence and to establish my presence here. And this morning and leading up to this talk, I've just had this really deep sense of gratitude. And I think it's because of the really fun Sunday that we had last week where we got to celebrate our anniversary of that statement of inclusion of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And it sounds really weird to say it like that because we thought that we were bringing people in, and really what it was doing, it was allowing us to really learn to know and accept and love and affirm ourselves. And I just want to take a second to thank our LGBTQ brothers and sisters that really led the way for that. Oh my God, Anna's in this service and she's gonna make me cry. I just wanna say that I really appreciate you guys, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to be up here and talk to you guys about love. Around here at Eastlake, we say often that life is a gift and love is the point. But what does that mean? What does love mean? So I found this video that might help point us in the right direction.
What is love? What is love?
I have no idea.
What is love?
Love is when you love somebody. And it's when you love somebody, and it's really when you love somebody.
What do you think it feels like to be in love?
It feels like heaven.
What do people who are in love with each other do?
They be gross.
What does that mean?
They kiss, they be gross.
If you're not in love and you want to be, what should you do to find someone?
Go to a woman casino.
What about Tinder? Do you think that's a good way to meet people?
Tinder? Maybe. If it's chicken, probably. They would prefer to lick it.
Chicken Tinder?
Yeah. I love it a lot.
Yeah, it's fun to have on a date.
Yep.
Do any of your friends at school have boyfriends?
I don't know that answer. My friend pretended she did, but it was just a stuffed animal.
That's weird, right?
It was funny. Because after school, who knows what happens with him?
I like to do it. All the time.
You like to do what all the time?
Play with my Legos.
Do you like girls?
Yeah.
Do you have a girlfriend?
Yes.
Who is she?
Isabella.
What do you like about her?
Her hair. She has beautiful toys.
Is there anyone you have a crush on?
It's a secret. I'm not telling anybody.
So is she your girlfriend?
No. But she's beautiful.
Is that, what do you like about her besides that she's beautiful?
She's just beautiful.
Is there any boy you have a crush on at school?
No.
How did you know you were in love with her?
When I met her in kindergarten, she was just so beautiful, and she had long hair. She was just so beautiful.
What is love?
I can do kicks.
I'll see the kicks. Wow. And that's what love is?
Yeah. And
not really into that stuff anymore.
Like what stuff?
Like marrying stuff anymore. I feel like I want to be single this now.
What about like?
And so when Ryan asked me to talk about love, I totally turned into one of these kids. I was just like, God, I don't know. Love is like, it's love. It's like when you love someone or you're like in love with someone. And I was like, oh shoot, what am I going to talk about? Because the thing is that I've changed a lot over the last few years. You know, we talked a little bit about this statement of inclusion of affirmation that we made 3 years ago. And looking back over the transformation that has happened in me because I've been able to affirm and accept myself. So I've changed, and because I've changed, my relationships have changed a lot. And there's been a lot of really beautiful things that have blossomed out of those relationships changing. But there's also been a lot of like difficult and painful changes that have had to happen. And because my relationships have changed, my view of love has changed, because I used to think for a really long time that, I mean, for most of my life, that love is something that happens in relationship to someone else. Or it's something that happens outside of me, something that I do for people that I love. And that's changed for me and turned something into something more internal for me versus being something that's external outside of myself that deals with someone else or something else. And I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to write this talk because it's helped me process some of and put language to some of those changes. And also this book that they're going to put a picture of, True Love by Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Buddhist monk. Helped me also putting some language and context around some of the internal shiftings that have happened on my view of love. So first, I wanted to talk about some of the things that led up to this shift in my view of love and some of the things that started breaking down and showing me some of the limitations that that type of love has when it's based in relationship based on something external. And then I'll go into what I view love as today. So for me, there were two defining situations or mile markers that I can go back and say, oh, I started seeing some of the limitations of that type of love for me. first, in 2013, I was 30 years old, and I had two miscarriages in the span of about 6 months. And in the wake of those miscarriages, I found myself in a very dark place. I felt very disappointed. I felt very heartbroken. I felt alone. And as an adult, it was really the first time that I had experienced any kind of substantial loss. In the last talk that I did last year, I talked a lot about my childhood and how that encompassed a lot of trauma and loss. I lost my mom when I was very young, and my dad's second marriage was very dysfunctional, and so there was a lot of verbal and physical abuse there, and oftentimes I'd find myself in the middle of that, and so it was very chaotic. And as a child, I also experienced sexual abuse, and so as a kid, I had experienced a lot of loss and a lot of trauma, but as an adult, my life was really great. I had a really wonderful husband that loved me very much. I had the cutest little four-year-old girl that you've ever seen in your whole life. And I had a cute house and a good job, and things were really good. And when I experienced these miscarriages and then all, and really the disappointment after, what it was showing to me was that it was breaking down some of my views about God and about my relationships. Because what I noticed, looking back now, what I noticed is that I thought that because I had experienced so much suffering and pain and heartache as a child, that the only way I could really resolve God's goodness was that if I didn't have to suffer anymore. And so what I saw my early adulthood as this beautiful kind of, like, everything going really well for me was that I didn't have to suffer anymore, that God was kind of taking it easy on me. And now I can see that that's a very broken and toxic way to see a loving God. But at the time, that's just what I felt. And to see that kind of break, that the relationship that I thought that I had with God kind of breaking, and so love breaking in that. And then also during that time, I had so many people around me comforting me and loving me. I think I had, for both miscarriages, I had meals coming 3 or 4 times a week. And I was surrounded by people who loved me. And I still felt very broken and alone. And then a couple years later, in 2015, with our announcement of affirmation at the church, that was another defining moment where I had to come to terms with some of my limitations, some of the limitations that this type of love brought for me and the people around me, because this was the first time, like, our church made this announcement, but I chose to also make this a personal stance in my life. And so in doing that, we had a lot of hard conversations with friends and family to tell people how we got here, why we were doing this. And it was the first time that I had spoken something, put my name on something that I knew would be disappointing to a lot of people, really important people in my life. And the hardest person for me to navigate that time was with my dad. Like I mentioned earlier, I experienced a lot of trauma as a child, and my dad was my one constant through all of that. And I was his constant through all of that. Even though we were having our own experiences, we were physically together, and so what that did was it bonded us very foundationally to each other, and we became enmeshed with each other. We became codependent on each other for comfort and solace. And then right before my mom passed away, she made my dad promise that he would start taking my brother and I to church. And so another way that we learned to cope with the instability and the kind of chaos in the world, where one day things can be this way and then the next day it can be completely different, and the instability and fear that kind of stirs up in us, was through our Christian faith and belonging in a community, in a safe community that took care of us, that loved us, and we found a lot of comfort and solace in that. And so around 2015, when my beliefs started changing about God and my beliefs started changing about the way that I saw the Bible, and there started to be differentiation between me and my dad. There started to be disconnection between all of these things that had been so similar between us. When that started happening, it stirred up a lot of fear inside of my dad. And when fear is the thing that's driving you, that's driving your decisions in life, then there's no room for compassion or critical thinking, or seeing the other person, and you just immediately go into survival mode. You go into the flight, fight, freeze, and my dad's mode was fighting for my safety, fighting to keep me close to him. And, you know, we had so many conversations and arguments about the way that I was thinking and the dropping of a lot of my belief systems and the way that I see the world. And I had never been in that position with my dad before. I had never been in that place of disconnection from him. And I was frozen in that. And my view of love started cracking because the relationship was cracking. And it was a moment of being brought down to probably the lowest point of my life, for sure. It was a really dark place for me. Even though, again, there were so many people around me that from this community that supported me during this time, I knew that even though my expectations for that this kind of love should be filling something in me, right? That there's love in relationship, and if I wasn't getting it here, then I should be getting it here, but that wasn't happening because even though I had so many loving people around me, I still felt alone because no one was going to be able to fix this for me. And what I can see back now is that it wasn't even necessarily the aloneness that was so heartbreaking. It was that I was alone and I was empty. There was a void of love because I was alone. And 3 years from now, there's not much about my situation with my dad that's changed. I still have a very difficult time. We both have a very difficult time figuring out how to be in relationship with each other. So that environment has not changed at all, but the thing that has changed is my internal environment. That even though there's been a breaking of that relationship, that now I don't feel the void of love inside of me because of the breaking of the relationship. And this is the pivot point that I want to make about love. Thinking about love as something that's not based on external situations, something not based in a relationship that we have with someone else or something that we do for people that we love, but love as a constant state of being, that when those things disappear around us, that we are still filled with love, that we still remain in love. I heard this talk by Sadhguru, who is an Indian yogi mystic, and I kind of condensed it and made it fit this format, so it's not his exact words, but it goes something like this, and you'll see it up on the screen. If you think of love as something that comes to you or something that you lead, it will be based on that which is acceptable to you. But once someone does a thing that's unacceptable, love crumbles. But if you make your internal environment pleasant, if you make your emotions sweet, then your emotions are sweet. If someone comes, you can share it with them. If no one comes, you can sit here with eyes closed and still be loving. There is no problem. What we actually are able to manage internally, we also try so hard to manage externally. But managing external atmosphere to foster pleasantness is very difficult to do and will never be perfect. Love is not about another person or another object. It's not about relationship. Love is not action. It's not something you do. It is something you can become. And what resonated with me about the way he describes love, because I've been able to see the transformation in my own life, is that when we invest in our internal environment, when we cultivate an atmosphere within us that is open and inviting and free from frustration, we're easily able to embody love. And love is available to us all the time, no matter what's going on around us. Ram Dass says, "Unconditional love really exists in each of us. It is part of our deep inner being. It's not so much an active emotion as a state of being. It's not, I love you for this or that reason, not I love you if you love me. It is love for no reason, love without an object." And I believe that this is the truest form of love, existing, love just existing because it exists. And one of the key variables, and so I really want you to pay attention to this part, one of the key variables that I think keeps us from being able to live into this unconditional love that resides in us, that is in our being, is that we have this deep desire for control in our lives. But the reality is we cannot control our external environments. We cannot control the external. And whatever we can kind of a little bit manipulate and control, it takes management, it takes work. And I believe the reason why it's so important that we come to terms with this reality that we cannot control the external is that if we do this, if we work so hard setting up everything in our external environments, to be the way that we want them to be, or we think, or the way that we think they should be, then we'll live our lives in constant state of disappointment and frustration and stress. And this is not the type of environment that fosters pleasantness or makes room for love. And I'm sure all of you in the room, you and listening, you know this because you've experienced disappointment and frustration in your life. The person you love leaves you, no matter how badly you want them to stay or how hard you try to convince them to stay. You're unable to get pregnant, no matter how much time and resources you put into it. Your coworker gets promoted instead of you, and you worked your butt off to get there. And no matter how many times you ask your husband to put his slippers under the couch, he refuses to remember. That's just hypothetical. That would never, ever happen. So every time you're frustrated or disappointed, I would invite you to use it as a friendly reminder that I cannot control my external environment.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Eastlake podcast. This is Ryan. I'm a part of the staff team here at Eastlake, and I hope you're enjoying the series, Love, Grace, Beauty, and Truth. I'm so excited for you to hear from everybody who's scheduled to contribute to this series. I know that it's going to impact your life in a positive way. Once again, just wanted to say thank you to so many of you who are continuing to contribute. Many of you who don't even live anywhere physically near us. There's no geography that unites us. What unites us is this growing awareness that life is a gift and love is the point. And this crazy dream of cultivating a community that doesn't center around theological or supernatural agreement, but instead says ultimately a community of people who journey towards becoming love, that could actually make a difference in the world. So thanks for being a part of that. Thanks for contributing. If you haven't yet, but you find these messages helpful to your life, consider making a donation. Just hop onto our website, eastlakecc.com, and you can make a one-time or an ongoing donation there. So thanks for considering that. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Let's jump back in with the message.
And I do want to make one clarification about this. When I say control, I'm not talking about choices. I 100% absolutely believe that we should be making choices about everything in our lives. We should be making choices about our thinking patterns, about our behavior patterns, about the relationships that we allow in our lives, the environments that we put ourselves into. I think we should be making conscious choices about all of that. But the idea that we have any control after we make those choices is an illusion. And I'm an Enneagram 9 peacemaker, so my mode of operation and everything, my motivation in everything that I do is to find inner peace. That's the most important thing in my life. And I have spent my entire life working on my external environments and my relationships and making sure I don't say anything mean to this person because I don't want them to leave, or working really, really hard at my job so I don't lose my job, setting up everything outside of myself to try and offer some kind of internal peace. But what I've found is that going inward and changing my perspective from inside on life, that's what's actually given me inner peace that stays consistent. It's made me less rigid, less breakable, more fluid. It's helped me to be more and more okay in the constant not okayness of life. And if we're able to set our internal settings to okay, if we can let go and let go and let go until we're really good internally, then we're less affected and less bothered by what happens and what goes on outside of us. And when we're less affected, we're less frustrated, and we become less fearful, and that makes room for clarity and for stillness and for being and for love. And so I want to spend the rest of the talk going inward, going into our internal environment. The Buddha says the object of your practice should first of all be yourself. Your love for the other, your ability to love another person, depends on your ability to love yourself. And I want to talk about three ideas today: awareness, acceptance, and presence, as it relates to changing our mindset from looking at love as something that happens to us or that we do, an action, something that happens in relationship, and we turn our thinking into love as a consistent state of being, where we have pleasantness within ourselves, sweetness in our emotions, where we embody love. And what if this could be true? What if what I'm saying could be true, right? What if this is available to us, that we can embody love and that it can be available to us at any moment, no matter what's going on outside of us? How would that change our relationships with others? How much would we love, how much more could we love ourselves if we weren't so affected by everything that's going on outside of us? So we're going to take some time to go through some of these things to get there. So first, awareness. Deep looking into your internal landscape. And going inward, we first have to know what we're working with. We need to become aware of what's inside of us and survey our internal territory. And when we turn inward, we'll most likely find that there are deep-rooted pains and wounds and formations that need our attention. Because if you have lived life, you have suffered. And if you've been in relationships, you've been hurt. And like Ryan said last week, it's impossible for us to see clearly with tears in our eyes. And pain and suffering that's not been cared for causes cloudiness in our vision, regardless of if you're aware of it or not. And if all you've ever known is blurry vision, then you don't know that there's another way. And most people live their lives in this state, making decisions through cloudy vision, through brokenness, through pain, through suffering. I work in the, or volunteer in the kids area, and we had a teacher a couple weeks ago talk to the kids about some of the ways that she operated a lot of her life through a cloudy version of herself because of something that a teacher said to her, that this teacher told her that she was not artistic. And so she lived her whole life believing that she was not able to be artistic. And then it was just in the last like year or two that she picked up a paintbrush and a canvas and found out that she really loved doing that. And I'm sure that all of us, we have those things that we've believed about ourselves our whole lives because of something someone said or a frustration that we found in ourselves, and we took that as our truth when it's really not our truth. It's cloudiness in our vision. And for a lot of us, we've experienced so much pain and so much suffering that it feels too much to bear. And that was my reality for 33 years of my life. I was too afraid to go into the pain of my childhood and to sit with it long enough to understand it because of the cloudy lens that I was too broken to experience any kind of pain. And I lived my life in a constant panic, worrying so hard and trying so hard to keep everything upright and stable in my life. We have this deep desire to not be destroyed by our pain, so we run away from it and we dodge it and deflect it. We shove it onto other people, we yell at it. And all this does is it just induces more and unnecessary suffering on ourselves and the people around us. Instead of yelling at our pain, instead of pushing it down, instead of running away from it, what we should be doing is bringing in another energy to care for it. And this is the energy of mindfulness. Thich Nhat Hanh has a beautiful metaphor he uses to describe the energy of mindfulness. When a mother hears her baby crying, she puts down whatever she's working on and she goes to the baby and takes the baby in her arms. She doesn't know yet what is wrong with the baby, but just being held gives the child relief. In this moment, she brings in the energy of tenderness and practices deep looking. Then, when the understanding comes, when she knows what's wrong, she's able to change the situation immediately. And this is how we should be treating our pain and our suffering, with tenderness. Mindfulness is the practice that brings the body and the mind back together in the present moment. And when we practice it, we allow ourselves not to be consumed or lost in the past and the future, because we bring our mind and we connect it to our body where we are right now, not in the past and not in the future. And when we're practicing mindfulness in regards to our pain, each time that pain is manifested, each time it kind of comes up, because it'll come up over and over, but each time it comes up, it has a little less charge to it. It's a little weaker. And if we practice mindfulness every day, we have enough of this tender energy to care for our pain as it arises versus retroactively caring for this huge mountain of suffering that we can care for our pain as it comes up. There's this practice called compassionate abiding, which is a take on mindful breathing. So mindful breathing is just when you breathe in, you are aware that you're breathing in. When you breathe out, I'm aware that I'm breathing out. And that's connecting the mind and the body. And this practice, I actually got to practice this morning because I woke up with a lot of anxiety about being up in front of you guys and a lot of fear that I was not going to do well and I was going to disappoint people. And so I actually practiced this morning and it was beautiful. It like immediately gave me relief. And so I want to share this with you. And this is something we'll put in the weekly email as a resource. So the first thing you do when you find yourself consumed by your suffering or fear, rage, anxiety, jealousy, any kind of negative energy, you locate the suffering, locate the negative energy in your body. How is it manifested? For me, sometimes it's I get really hot in my face, or I get knots in my stomach, or like a tight throat, or in my shoulders, tenseness or tingling in my fingers. And so you locate it in your body, and then on the in-breath, you breathe in the suffering, breathe in the discontentment. And as you breathe in deeply, your heart expands. It gets bigger, and it gets bigger, and it makes, and you just keep breathing it in, keep allowing it no matter how bad it feels. And then when you breathe it in, you open up to it, and you welcome in the suffering. It almost takes the suffering out of shame. It makes you like not feel bad that that's there, and that already in itself immediately brings relief. And then still abiding with this tension, with this edginess, you breathe out and relax and give the feeling space. And it's not a way of sending the discomfort away, but it's a way of ventilating it, of loosening the tension and becoming aware of the space. And for me, I did this about four or five times, and I started feeling relief in my body. In this practice, you're allowing yourself to feel fully human, and in that acceptance and non-judgment, you find relief. And why is this important, being aware of your internal territory and caring for your pain? Because caring for yourself and being tender with your suffering and reestablishing peace in yourself is the basic condition for helping someone else. If you haven't dealt with the suffering and the pain in your life, there is no way for you to be able to help someone else, because hurt people hurt people. To provide help to someone else, we must have calm and joy and compassion in ourselves. Because if we're a hurt people, a fearful people, a protective people, we cannot be a loving people. So first, we become aware of our internal environment and we care for it. And then the second idea is the idea of acceptance, the flowers and the compost. Within us, we find that there are flowers, formations like faith, hope, understanding, and love. And there are always waste materials like pain and fear. And we already know this, but the important part is the acceptance of it. The relief that comes when we are okay that there's positive and negative energies in us and we don't need to get rid of them, because all of those energies serve a purpose. They're all beneficial for us. And this eliminates frustration within ourselves, and it eliminates frustration about ourselves. And I love this metaphor of the flower and the compost, because we all understand the importance of the compost as it relates to the growth of the flower. And that, I believe, that metaphor helps us in understanding how those negative energies can be beneficial for us in the transformation of ourselves. Because we need the pain and the suffering to be able to transform into compassion and peace and love. As we care for the compost, we watch it turn to flowers, and then we're able to really see the flower and be grateful for her. A very simple practice you could do, and I tried to memorize some of these, and if you get that book, True Love, that he has so many beautiful mantras and simple practices that you can do to help with understanding this kind of stuff. But for the things that you already love about yourself, it's good to take a moment and be mindful and be grateful for those things. And so a mantra that I love for that was, "Dear one, I know that you are there, and I'm glad about it." Like if you find yourself practicing patience, saying, "Dear patience, I know that you are here, and I am glad about it." And for the things that are more difficult in you to accept, a great mantra is, "Dear one, I am here for you." So, dear suffering, dear pain, I am here for you. And this will bring you relief. And why is the acceptance of ourselves important? The acceptance of the flowers and the compost in ourselves helps us to accept the same in others. How could you have understanding and compassion for another person's suffering if you don't have it for your own? And also, the understanding of this cycle of transformation that happens within us, it helps ease our anxiety about what's going on in our external environments. When things get hard to bear, relationships get difficult, or job situations, or whatever kind of situations become difficult to bear, then this helps to remind you that this doesn't last forever, that this is a cycle. And once we have looked deeply into our internal landscape, and we understand it, and we learn to care for it, and we have acceptance of ourselves for all of it, the flowers and the compost, and we see the beauty in all of it, then we become free. If we live in freedom, there is room for presence. Clear-eyed, clear-minded, wide-awake presence. When we're not consumed by our own suffering or bogged down by past regrets, then we have room to see beyond ourselves. And your presence is the most precious gift that you could give someone else. In this state of being, in this state of presence, we're really able to see others and be there for others, not out of a mindless obligation, but out of a radiance of the love that resides in you, and now that love has space to shine. When we become love, we radiate the fruits of love, loving kindness, our ability to look deeply with the intention of understanding for ourselves and for others, compassion, the desire and ability to ease the pain of someone else because you've done it for yourself, and then joy, the manifestation of gratitude, the celebration of the life around you. And freedom. Because we are free, we allow others to be free. We can lay down our pride. We can lay down our expectations that anyone else needs to be anything other than who they are because we know that we are already whole. We don't have a void inside of us that we need anybody else to fill. And this is how we love others. We learn to love ourselves, to accept ourselves, and ease the pain within ourselves, and foster an environment of sweetness within ourselves. And then the fruit of love, true presence, is available for ourselves and anyone around us, should they be there. But it must start with you first, your deep looking into yourself. And once you let go of all of these expectations, you let go of your need for anything external to have to be a certain way, and you let go of your feelings of entitlement that this world owes you anything, once you do that, then everything becomes a gift. And what is seeing everything as a gift but a sweetness of your emotions? This is love. Can you stand with me as I wrap up? The last time I spoke with you guys, I invited you to come on a journey with me, to walk with me in this journey of going inside to find healing for our suffering and our pain so that we could actually truly be a beneficial presence in the world. And today, I invite you to do that again, to take another step with me of going inward, of making and creating more and more space as we learn to be aware of what's going on, accepting ourselves, and being present so that we can do that for others. And so today, as we go out this week, may we remember that life is a gift, that everything that comes your way is a gift and is a beneficial presence for your transformation, and that love, your presence, your conscious engagement in life is the point. Thank you guys so much for being here with me. Enjoy the Super Bowl.